Welcome to Audio Face, an irreverent podcast about music news and culture that mostly matters. I am Sean.
I'm Dan.
This is episode 206. A little bit shorter episode for the humans this week because we've got lives and shit, so you know we had to consolidate a little bit. But we do have two albums that we're going to review. We have Life of a Don by Don Toliver. We have Friends That Break Your Heart by James Blake. And also, we got some short music recommendations as well, just to throw in some floof there for y'all music-craved heathens out there.
Yes, for you debaucherous heathens, we love all you organics out there. two albums we're reviewing, and we've got two music recommendations each, so arguably more than you'd get in a regular Audio Face episode anyways. Plus, we gave you an hour and a half of No Chill Island, so like you've...
Ooh, yeah.
Yeah. I'm an hour and a half of Audio Face, including a 30-minute No Chill Island. So y'all are satiated, let's say. A lot of fun responses to the R. Kelly segment as well. That was great. So make sure to check that out at youtube.com/audiofacepod. Keep the engagements coming, but let's go to singles.
Yeah, singles. We got three singles this week, but we'll start off by Super by Corday, former YBN Corday. Dropped YBN, and that was just Corday because, you know, it's not cool to put three letters before your name anymore.
I mean, he messed up my niggas up at Coca-Cola for the check that cut me at the Super Bowl. All my life moments is a Super Bowl. My nigga Dr. Dre, he got a Super Bowl. Last night, I was texting Jack Dorsey. That's the perks you get from being super dope. I be feeling like it's me against the world, but I can give a fuck who my opponent is. Niggas asking why I dropped the YBN. I had no other choices. We ain't owning shit. And all that janky shit, I'm not condoning it. With a couple niggas, I got a bone to pick. I'm on some movement shit, y'all on some moment shit. But I'll be here forever, y'all can go and quit. We had bad bitches in a new Bentley. Just read up.
Yeah. I thought it was funny. I think it's a decent single. I think it's nothing like special or anything, but I think his flow sounds good. His rap's decent. And then, yeah, when he mentions the part of YBN, I started dying a little bit.
Yeah, it's a very, you know, boisterous song, similarly to the EP that he recently released. That was sort of just like, you know, a little bit of a taste of what he has to come from an upcoming album. A lot of it in the refrain, he's bragging about how he made, I believe, like $7 million without performing a concert. And it's like, well, last year was 2020 and no one was performing concerts. But I mean, it's still a good feat to be said for someone who's very much in a point of his career where he's like blowing up. He's about to really, really, really blow up, I think, with his next project. And I also realized by watching that documentary about Naomi Osaka on Netflix that Corday and Naomi Osaka are dating, which I think is just like one of the more hilarious things. It kind of works out when you think of like Naomi Osaka as a tennis player and then Corday as a rapper. They're both like kind of
So random, but okay.
It's a little random, but they're definitely like down to earth people. I don't know if it's gonna last forever, but I can totally see why it works. Moving on.
All right. And we got Waiting for the Knife by Mitski. Mitski's first single since, I believe her first thing since Be the Cowboy. Fantastic album that came out 2018 on my final list of, you know, favorite albums of the year in 2018. I like the single. It's a short track. I think it's only about 2.5 minutes long or so. A little bit slow, it kind of builds some stuff with it, but production's good overall, and I like it. I mean, I do tend to like her music, but overall, it's a pretty decent track. I'm not sure if she has a album coming out. I don't know if Dan, if you got more information on that, but I would hope so.
I do not have more information, but I definitely would hope she's releasing more music. You really tell like the passion in this. It's a little bit of a slower song, but it still has a lot of energy.
It's still good.
Really good at doing that. And yeah, I haven't seen like a major release from her since this. I mean, she's had a couple of like one single, I believe, for like a album or something, for like a movie. But Working for the Knife is just like a really nice sort of modern rock ballad thing in the background going on for it that more or less makes it sound just beautiful. So I'm really looking forward to what Mitski's got coming out. This might be actually a single from that future thing, since her production releases are so like kind of rare here or there, but we will keep an eye out on that for sure.
Yes. And last single, we've got Breathe Deeper, Lil Yachty Remix. Breathe Deeper as Tame Impala track, which I really like. And
blew us away when we first heard it. When we reviewed that album on the Slow Rush on Audio Face last year.
Yes, in February of last year before the world went tits up. But yeah, fantastic track. Really like it. And then Lil Yachty had to try and remix it, and it's one of the worst things I've heard on this podcast. It's fucking beautifully horrible. It's amazing. He literally just took Breathe Deeper, took out Tame Impala's vocals, and just rapped over it. All on my back, can't feel the wind. I see stars every time I hold your hand. You can leave your car, self-driving, brand new Benz. Loosen up your guard, make it shit last, I don't want it to end. Hope you do your part. I just need you to snap on both of your hands. Like that. Let the way you move when it's like that. It is the weirdest mix ever, and it's just horribly sounding, but it's hilarious.
One of my friends sounds like Lil Yachty Y2MP3'd Breathe Deeper. Just like straight just went to the YouTube downloader website, allegedly parody, and got the song and rapped over it. Like, and he made a really good point that I'll echo here, is that rappers can sound great in indie, but you have to kind of make the song around that. You have to make it work. It's not really great where it's like, and this doesn't sound great in rock music either, where you have a remix that's just like a rock song with a rapper over it. When artists like do this and stick to this, Maroon 5, it just sounds terrible every single time.
Yeah, it's just hilarious. Absolutely hilarious.
It kind of reminds me of Praise, the Chami track. Chami, who I love, the EDM DJ, but with it's Gunna.
Oh, it's just sort of like right. Really yeah.
Not great. Just be thoughtful when you're blending EDM and rap, because when you do it, it's brilliant. See Vince Staples. See some of Goldlink's projects. See some of IDK's more recent projects.
Yes. Plugs.
Yes. 2021 AF playlist. Check that out. It is great. It is big. It is like almost 12 hours long, I want to say. I was looking at one of my playlists, and I was like amazed at how many songs there are. But regardless of the length, which I am confirming right now, we are adding songs 12 hours, 44 minutes. So 13 hours almost. Jesus. We're adding songs from the entire year of music, things that are great, things that sound good and will hopefully be a little bit of everyone out there. You can find the link to the playlist in the podcast or video description. Check out the bonus episodes that we're doing. We did a Kendrick Lamar bonus episode. We know Kendrick's going to be dropping any week now, and you can find that at just youtube.com/audiofacepod or anywhere you get podcasts. It's this previous bonus episode, 156 bonus. We've done previous bonus episodes on Caro Benito, Radiohead, Daft Punk. It's just the entire episode is just this artist going into their past discography and what we expect from them in the future. That really some of our fun episodes. And we are going to get back to them, I promise. We just got to start planning ahead more. And you can help grow Audio Face and help us like get the resources to do some of that planning by going to following us at Audio Face Pod on Twitter or Instagram. You could follow us at youtube.com/audiofacepod, youtube.com/audiofacepod. All these following and things, it helps us actually grow the show. And these things really help us when we're growing and getting more resources. Power Report, we did an episode last week, half on Canadian politics with Sandy Lovas of Left of the Box. It was a really phenomenal episode. Check it out. And the other half of it had German politics with Sean. So for those of you who want to hear political Audio Face, you got it for one episode and one episode only. Check that out on the Power Report feed at youtube.com/danfromtheinternet or at Power Report anywhere you get podcast. And check out Dead Music 666 on Instagram if you're a music producer or someone who's into music or someone who makes audio sound nice. All the episodes of Audio Face and Power Report as of late have been mastered by Dead Music Productions. You can find the Dead Music 666 on Instagram whenever Instagram is, you know, running and alive. And thank you, Peter, very much for doing all that. So let's get into our tight and lean stories this week on Audio Face.
Yeah, but the big one, the main story, which I really wanted to go into, is big Audio Face thing. Pitchfork, the music site, which we tend to use sometimes for news here or there, but I always like to see their ratings just for how shit they are. They're doing they rescored 19 album reviews, you know, ranging from PJ Harvey to Daft Punk, rescoring a bunch of records, either downgrading them or upgrading them from their scores from the previous stuff. And I have a list of issues to go along with this, because the whole reason why we do an arbitrary scale is so that way our review is our review. We say what it is. Every once in a while, an album will grow on us and we'll talk about it here or there. But what we viewed was what we reviewed at the time. It's what we felt at the time, so on and so forth, naturally, right? Obviously, some albums can grow on you later as you get it conceptually and stuff. But this, like, that's why we don't like doing scores, because it's not fair for an album to give it a score when it can evolve to something greater, or, you know, unevolve into something terrible as well later on, which is very rare, but does happen.
Yeah, I want to add to that before you jump into the list, Sean, is that I think we try to do things to the extent that we can as fairly as possible. We review albums on the same scale. We review like three in a row generally, so we can give each album enough time to really sink in. When we review more in a given week, at least the way we have set up Audio Face right now, it starts to blend together and we can't give albums a fair enough score, and then it also starts to skew how we've reviewed albums 200 episodes on in. So that keeps it fair. The way we do the singles rule, the way we try to keep that up, keeps things as fair as possible. There's a number of different things down the way, like through the way we produce Audio Face, that tries to get us to some like semblance of fairness. But at the end of the day, all these opinions are subjective. We want to try to express that. We think that you know, to the margins, sometimes you can say, no, that's objectively bad mixing, or that's objectively bad like sounding stuff, right? But a lot of that is like in the extremes, in the margins. A lot of this is just subjective, and it's fun to have music discourse and talk about it with people. It's a community thing. And like Sean said, we talk about times where albums grow on us. We talk about times where albums have the space to grow on us if we're just reviewing them. And so I think it's important as a music, not just as a music critic, but like people who are music fans, to be like mature out there in the comment section and allow that space for you to like, albums can grow on you. Albums might actually, you listen to this after a while and it doesn't age quite as well. Or you can separate it between something that has a good space for you versus a good space for versus like being a good album, right? Like there's some albums I like personally, even though I can acknowledge they're not like absolute works of art, right? And that's totally fine.
Yeah. I'll go into some of what they did, right?
Yeah, let's jump in. This is gonna be great.
Let's jump. I'm not gonna do every single one. I'm just gonna do ones like just to give you an understanding, and then I'm gonna go on a rant on a couple of them.
I just wanna say sorry, last thing, because the Pitchfork article says, and I quote, "What follows are 19 ideas about rescoring." And I think that's the right tone we need before we jump in.
Yeah, should I read this in Dave Rubin voice like the whole time?
Please don't.
BJ Harvey, Stories from the City, Stories from the Sea, year 2000. It was a 5.4, but now it's 8.4 because it's evolved into a great rock album. Because before her fifth album, going to her fifth album, I'm going to cry of laughter. Okay. Anyways, but yeah, that's the first one, because I like PJ Harvey. PJ also Harvey, Tongue, yes. Analyzed her fifth album. I always liked Stories from the City, Stories from the Sea. They did that from a 5.4 when it was done in the year 2000, and they upgraded it to 8.4 21 years later. It's like, okay, well, like you can leave it. That doesn't make sense to push, you know, an album up, but whatever. That's what happens.
I don't have a strong opinion about that album necessarily.
I mean, I like that. I always liked that. I always liked it. So there's nothing like too crazy with it. You have Tom on it and stuff, but.
In the way of like they upgraded the score there, like what was it about generally that like, is this sort of an instance of like, okay, hey, we just didn't know the sauce that we had while we came on, but like it grew on us a lot more?
More or less, yeah. It's more of because it's the whole year 2000, like you it's the shift from grunge into alt rock. It's the shift from, you know, alt rock to more experimental stuff. So it's that whole thing of, you know, you're still stuck in that cube and you're trying to get out of that cube, but you don't understand the concepts and stuff of the record at the time. Because PJ Harvey really made like a solid alt rock album with it, and they didn't receive it well. But I mean, that's music journalism. You have like one, like these are the ones that I like really bug me, other than the Daft Punk ones, because we'll get to those in a second. Like Grimes, Miss and Anthropocene, which I can never say that.
Misanthropocene.
Yeah, I can never say that record
I want to
right.
say that's a silent C.
Which came out last year, right? They already downgrade one from a year ago, from an 8.2 to a 6.9. Like, how do you go just a year and then go back on your review and be like, oh, hey, I messed up or something? Like, your review is your review at that time, especially only a year apart. Like, doesn't make sense.
Yeah, we are very
It
vocal
pisses me
critics.
off.
We're very vocal critics of Grimes here on Audio Face, for a lot of reasons that don't have to do with the music. But music,
Yes.
she's been like fairly consistent.
She's been fine.
As opposed to Kanye West, who like his music just deteriorated through the Kardashian relationship.
Yes.
I'm saying causation, not necessarily correlation here, but that was
Yes.
just like a thing I noticed. Grimes has been fairly consistent. I wouldn't say it's one of those other cases here, like we said in the beginning, where it's a lot of times I give an album a good review, and that may be the last time I listen to that album for several years, or maybe a year or so. And yeah, maybe I gave like the Grimes album a decent review when we did it, but like it's not necessarily like a thing that I would be listening or repeating necessarily that often. But also, that sort of comes down to my own personal preferences. I think my review of the record, just as many of the other things we listen on Audio Face that fall outside of my own personal preferences, is fair and still
Your
stands for
review.
what it is. Yeah.
Exactly. That's why we have the arbitrary scale. Now we're going to get to the two ones that piss me off. Okay, we're going to get to the recently retired, which makes me extreme sad boy, Daft Punk. You have Discovery, which is one of my all-time favorite albums of ever, ever. It's also the first album I ever purchased with my own coin. They originally, the first guy who reviewed it around Pitchfork put it as a 6.4. You should be hung, drawn, and quartered for giving it a 6.4 in the year in 2001. And then they bumped it up to a 10, which makes sense. But again, you gave it a 6.4. Just leave it as a 6.4, man. Just you messed up, own it. And it's the best part is this guy, the guy who reviewed it says, this is the review often quoted at me by any person who's ever cornered me at a party for a diatribe about the futility of music criticism. You're so like self-centered in your own ego that you can't just say, I fucked up. There you go. But whatever. And then the one that makes me like absurdly angry is Daft Punk's Random Access Memories, which was our I know album of the decade of the 2010s. They downgraded it from 8.8 to a 6.8 because they feel like people aren't listening to it anymore. The whole thing is, Ram has some jams, but it doesn't feel pivotal in the same way Discovery did. The fact that it opened up, disco to a bunch of people, right? You have all these different concepts throughout the album that have influenced music since. Like, you have a lot of funk stuff that have now really opened the door for funk is back, which is Dan's favorite term. A lot of that happened because of Random Access Memories as well, because people didn't really know about it much. Or if you grew up, like, even Gen Zs, if they heard that, they never, if they didn't, weren't exposed to it at a younger age, that was kind of their first big opening door into the realm of disco, of funk, of all these other throwback things. And like, they're still bumped to this day. So I don't know what they're talking about, because they said that, they gave it that review at 8.8 because they felt like, 10 years later, people would still be listening to it, which they are. I don't
Yeah.
understand what they're doing.
Like us music critics, like God no. Like Get Lucky and Lose Yourself to Dance, while they had like far more radio play than even like us Daft Punk fans would argue like they deserved, because like they're still being played like kids' parties, like everything, like
Yeah, they still
years and
are.
years after at like y again, like a decade out. Yes, almost. But I still stand by our thing of like Random Access Memories being a really, like you put it, Sean, like it's one of the
Incredible.
few universal albums where you can put it on for about anyone and
Exactly.
everyone will love at least something on it. And so that is like that. I think a lot of when it gets to the futility of scores here is because the ultimate arbitrary scale is these grades, these numbers, because I'm not really sure if this is just like them revisiting these reviews and going, huh, do I feel the same way? Yes or no? Which is something you should kind of, as a reviewer, think about, huh? I might listen to this in a couple years in the future and go, I could see this a different way. Or I think as a seasoned music critic, you've listened to enough albums to go, when does it kind of head in those directions? And we've said that before. I think Sean's been pretty clear with that with 21 Savage and like Issa album, for example.
And I've said that with recent reviews, you know, even last week I was saying that a couple of the albums that we listened to is like, it might take time for me to really grasp it conceptually because I didn't only got two listen throughs. If I have another 3-4 listen throughs of a record, I might enjoy it more or I might enjoy it less depending what it is. That's the whole point of doing a review, is you're open and honest with it instead of trying to fit it into a box of a specific number to then rate it against other albums. But you can't do that because every album is different. Not every genre is the same. Not every artist is the same. You can't, like, you're not trying to letter grade somebody to have a fight among artists. That's not the point. That's why we have an arbitrary scale. So it just really makes me mad when that happens. And I think a lot of people were saying that too online and whatnot.
Yeah, I think we've given all the necessary caveats there. I'll think my overarching point, I think, is also some of these things in here, like Chief Keef to, let's see, Chief Keef to, what is it, Lana Del Rey. Chief Keef, Lana Del Rey, a couple of these are sort of reviews, or Liz Phair, for example. Charlie XCX. Well, some of these I agree with. For example, like the Liz Phair album was originally given a 0 and now it's given a 6. I think that could be like some of the danger of these like extreme hot takes. Like sometimes it's good to thoroughly torch an album, but like be a little bit more careful with
like us on Saint on, like us on Saint John. Like we'll go to the grave saying that album was absolutely garbage because we still agree that the album is absolutely garbage. But there are things too where they're doing it because of the popularity of the album as well.
Yeah, or the
which is something you can't fucking do. Like, you need to be objective on music and not just base it on the popularity. And that's exactly what they did with Ram. They downgraded it because they see it as not being as popular as it once was. I'm like, well, no shit. That's like, an album is released. It's going to be, especially, you know, for the time. But it still stands as a great record. You can't downgrade it because of that. Also, it's still being played. So it's just so stupid.
And like Chief Keef sort of became just like a meme for like white people, essentially. Like obviously he's a black artist, but like all the Chief Keef fans I know are like white boys, which like fine, God bless. I love when like rap has these like intersecting like diameters. But ultimately the original score was a 7.9. Now you're moving it to a 9.1. That's a difference of like barely a point on either like side. So like ultimately it's being put there as like, okay, you moved it from being a, oh, really, really good, like above average album to being a, oh, this is an amazing top of the line album. Why? Like for clout? Same with the Lana Del Rey one, from 5.5 to 7.8, Born to Die. Okay, you could say it's maybe like moved up a little bit, but again, like the ultimate arbitrary scale, I'll say this again, the ultimate arbitrary scale are these numbers and letters that they just like warp discourse. They don't set it up for you to be able to talk about music in a proper way. We spent way longer than I expected to on that segment. So that's my final thoughts there. You're happy to continue, but that's all for me.
That's fine. No, that's fine. We're going to go into actual reviews of albums. And the first album review we have Life of a Don by Don Toliver. It is, let's see if I pop it up here. If
you 16 have songs, 51 minutes long. And
thank
Don
you,
Toliver, no worries. It's like a co-hosting kind of measure. Don Toliver is part of the like Cactus Jack record label kind of folks.
Yep.
He kind of blew up with a couple of mixtapes. Donnie Womack in 2018, Heaven or Hell in 2020. Heaven or Hell, which I really liked. I think it did a really nice
mix. I know you really liked
it. Yeah, it did a really nice
mix. I had some things I liked in it too, but...
Yeah, it had a really nice mix of... trap, like standard southern trap flares, like from like that kind of style with some neo-pop R&B kind of aspects as well, with Don Toliver kind of doing like a you know, his croon-ish style of voice, but it's also a very like synthetic auto-tune kind of thing that can get a little bit tired after a while. I think it was a good balance on Heaven or Hell, and on Life of a Don it just got really, really overboard.
I didn't mind the production of Life of a Don. I thought the production was a little bit better, actually, than Heaven or Hell. My issue was he took the good parts of Heaven or Hell's, like, neo-pop, like, trap and B parts, and just literally did that for an entire album. So it got just a little bit drawn out with how It played really slow throughout it, and it felt very, very long. You have features. You have two Travis Scott features, which actually the first one of Flocky Flocky, I thought was the first Travis Scott feature I've heard in a while that I actually enjoyed. I mean, I still think his ad-libs are terrible. Like there's the same ad-libs that he does every time, but he actually used his voice without auto-tuning or making like really shitty for the first time in a while. I took a far away to Lithuania. I keep a place to bait to tune your brain up. She's tough for facing cake. No way to see. Just save your words, they're safe. Blocks and handles, alright. Blocks and kookas. Got guns, now you took. Locking that juicer. Lawyers and shooters. Kali Ukis.
Can we pause on that? Because I was begging last week for us to disagree on an album. And I think this is one where, like, we're going to come to a same opinion, but we disagree on things very differently. So, like, I think Durag Activity with Travis Scott was, like, one of his better features more recently. Both of these on here were really kind of really washed out, I mean. Durag Activity with Baby Keem and Travis Scott. Baby Keem's also later on this album. I do like that Baby Keem song.
By the way, Baby Keem is really growing on me. Holy shit.
Very much so. Yeah. More on that very later. Much so. But yes. Yeah, Travis Scott in here, he just sounds very washed out and overdone. And I'm really just sort of like annoyed with it. On the production of this entire album too, it feels like, I agree with you on that, it is too much of what was working for Don Toliver on Heaven or Hell and just like continues through it and it drones on. Like this album at 51 minutes, I would consider it to be like on the short, medium end for a rap album. It's perfectly fine size, but it feels like it drags on way longer than
it feels super long.
It lacks that variation and Don Toliver's a great producer, but it lacks that variation until he brings on a number of other producers who aren't afraid to bring their own style and not just compliment Don's.
And that happens at Sonal, like example, the Metro Boomin track at Sonal 11, Company Part 2. That's so far down the album. And so I'm already like, okay, is this like the last track? Is this the second last track? I'm like, no, I still got five more tracks after this one. Keep a step, I'm on my own grind. I keep a cut. She want her own time. She trying to fuck. She's so in love with me. Metro song, like I liked it for the most part, but it still wasn't the flow of Don Toliver. It was still too slow for me to really pick it up. Like Metro can bring his production as much as he can, and it obviously it's top notch still. But like the lyricism, the vocals, everything is just, it's not enough to really keep bringing that album, like dragging it through the latter halves of it. Because I like the start with Escape and 5X, and I was listening to him like, okay, this might be good mix. These are the good parts of Heaven or Hell. Maybe he'll have his like more harder stuff, whatnot, mixed in throughout the album, but he really didn't. It was just flat throughout the whole thing. But I thought the Travis Scott features were okay because he didn't do the voice parts that really annoy me. I mean, other than the normal Travis Scott ad-libs, which are just so droned out now, like he needs to change those up. Even like 21 could sometimes be, could do that too. And that's one of my very few complaints about 21. But the vocals, I thought it was fine. But like you have these chunks and splits between the features, which just take forever to get to in between, like between Flocky Flocky and Drugs and Hella Melodies, you have, three tracks in between, and it feels like it's like six in between. It takes a long time to get between those features, and the same thing between, you know, Drugs and Hella Melodies to Outer Space, Kali Ukis and Baby Keem respectively. It takes a long time to get to those, and you have like those three tracks towards the end, Outer Space, Smoke and You, with all of those have features, and they're pretty decent, but again, they're still a bit too slow to really pick up the album.
Yeah, and that first block of features between Flocky Flocky and Drugs and Hella Melodies, even with Song 7, Swangin' and Westheimer, you get Metro Boomin's kind of like thick beats in that and production that as well, but it just like, it's a little bit of a saving grace, but not quite. Even Drugs and Hella Melodies, go on.
I said it's not enough. Like, Metro can do one thing in production, like, but at the end of the day, he's still listening to Don Toliver, what he wants. He's going to create whatever is in the vision of Don Toliver. And with that, it's like you're handcuffing him in a regard to where if you let him loose, you can like really save an album. Example, if you have Swing on Westheimer, if you make that track like a really good metro track, you could have a really good pick me up, and then have it a drop down with Drugs and Hella Melodies, and then have another pickup like that. So then you could really speed up the album, make it. Put some variables in there instead of just keeping it trapped in B throughout.
That definitely could have happened. Like that definitely could have happened because Drugs and Hella Melodies, I feel like, kind of fell flat as well with Kalaiuchis, and like you've got a great talent there. It didn't feel great. I kind of thought that,
exactly.
Like, we're kind of like getting a long time in here. I kind of want to speed up through this. 2 a.m. is like, it's 2 a.m. I kind of thought was like an okay thing. You're getting the best of like Don Toliver trying to push things forward, but again, it feels like a kind of a mix of the album isn't quite ordered right, and then the songs don't deliver that well either. Because then what you get to like Get Throat Company Part Two, and they're not like quite. They it's like two songs feel like four again.
Yep, exactly. And that's my whole thing. The album, because at first I was enjoying it because I really liked the production. And then I was sitting there like, oh, okay. Maybe I'm close to be finished with the album. I look, I go, holy crap, I'm only halfway done.
Yeah, song eight or
something. Why is it? I'm like, okay, maybe it picks up, and it never does. It just stays at one level, which is a big complaint.
Yeah. Well, I will say Baby Keem and like the songs he's producing have a sound. It tends to happen with like certain rap artists where like Lil Uzi Vert releases an album with a sound. Now every song Lil Uzi Vert is on, even featuring other artists, sounds like it came off of Lil Uzi Vert's album. That's kind of happening with Baby Keem. Nevertheless, I think Outer Space with Don Toliver and Baby Keem, they're a good sound fit match for each other. Does that make sense? Tennis chains on, feeling like Serena and shit. I got stripes, I got rank. I would run down on the opp, I call it a fame. But if I caught that chopper, nigga, I'm shooting out these ain't blanks. I've been in silence, you're known to keep it private. Hiking on the violence. So,
I think so, for sure. I like because Baby Keem does a thing where he likes to put two songs in one. Which I like in a way when he does big features with people. I like it because you can change up the flow and stuff and make it a little bit different. You don't need to, I mean, granted, he didn't do that on every track on his LP that was released about a month ago. Both Outer Space, that was one of the only tracks that I really, really liked on the album because it was kind of cool where you had that first part, you have like this beat in the background. It's like a really high-pitched electronic keyboard that actually sounds a lot like a Tori Amos song. I just can't think of it off the top of my head, but I thought like that part was kind of cool with the flow and how they did it. And then like in the middle of the song, it breaks up and then changes flows.
Yeah,
but then like even then, like it changes slower and then it picks up towards the end of it a little bit, which I like. I think it's something that with trap is something that's different. Not too many people are doing it. And I think it's something that Baby Keem has now really shown that he can do pretty well.
I mean, now that we're talking on the Cactus Jack record, Travis Scott did this and really brought it a lot with Astroworld, doing that in a lot of songs, not just with Sicko Mode, but with a couple of others. And yeah. I think
Highest in the Room too, and a couple others.
It's only, my take on it is it's starting to get played out in trap music right now. Not necessarily by Baby Keem, but also if Baby Keem continues doing this like on two more songs, I'm gonna call it as very gimmicky.
100%.
Because like you can't just, the thing that happens in traps, you just like smash two songs together, right? And sometimes it can work, sometimes you can just like draw out the beats a little bit because again, the beats are very repetitive and construction is not very difficult to do anyways. But in alternative music, or like classical music, when you have two songs that go together, there's measures, there's like a part in the middle where it actually kind of like you get the reason why you put them together. Empire Ants by Gorillaz, there's a reason why the beginning is soft and then the end is kind of hard, and there's like a transition in the middle that makes it make sense. It's not just like two songs slammed together. So that should be watched out for. But there's good ideas here. There's good talent here. But it's just misapplied in a lot of areas.
Yeah, more or less.
Yeah. So yeah, it's really good, but like it's unlike Heaven or Hell, like last year where there were like so many different, like 2020 was also a year and a vibe, so give it what it was. But Heaven or Hell hit me in waves where like there are some songs I really liked before it came out, and there are some songs I really liked while it was coming out, like the month it actually dropped. And there are some songs I revisited afterwards. And like, that's very rare for me to do for like a trap album, to come back to it constantly. And it's not to say like, it's not really because of like Don Toliver's rapping being particularly good or like quality. Yeah. It's just, it's catchy production. It's quality sort of hooks and things like that, that made Heaven or Hell a really solid project. I don't think Life of a Don is going to be the same way for me. And it's nice to have that kind of attempt there. It's not terrible. It's just like a lot of experiments. I don't like many of these experiments. But on Audio Faith, we're fine with the experimentation. We'll at least give you that. We'll call you out for that. We'll just definitely say, try some different directions and continue experimenting and refining those experiments with future projects. But I think Don Toliver definitely can.
Yep. Yep. Agreed.
Yes.
Arbitrary scale this week is the Pitchfork re-reviews, because we went on a pretty big rant tangent on that. So pick review, and that is our arbitrary scale. Take it for what it is. It's arbitrary. Nobody gives a fuck, because we don't.
This is arbitrary scale on arbitrary scale. This is really hot members.
Eight dimensional chess, baby.
Yeah. I'm gonna go on.
So this is Prince Musicology from 04. This is a 5.8 to a 7.8. Just, it's super random to revisit like Musicology of all Prince's records. It's super random to do, but okay.
I'm going to give this Hood Dreams by Knowledge.
Okay.
Also very random, upgraded from a 7.2 to an 8.4. It's also doing a lot of like R&B, hip hop kind of things, but I don't... It's definitely not like the same in quality, obviously. It's just, you know, arbitrary scale, because what we said in the review was what we said in the review.
Exactly. What
needs to be said on that.
Right. We'll let Denton take the wheel on this one.
Oh, man. Yeah. So, so Dave Chappelle got near a microphone again. He did a special on Netflix, rounding out his deal with Netflix. It's called The Closer. It, at least is currently available on Netflix. It received a lot of fire from Black organizations, from LGBTQ plus organizations, from Black LGBTQ plus organizations. So a lot of people don't like it. Nevertheless, this special is a lot about the perception that Dave Chappelle has of himself and the perception that other people have on Dave Chappelle, and him sort of working through that in a comedic fashion, right? And there's a lot of controversy about it. I'm not going to support Dave Chappelle or like harshly criticize him on this. It's not really like, very little of it had to do with music, except for this one clip I'm about to show here from the special that very much did have to do with music, because it kind of buttresses a point I've made on Audio Face a couple of times. And so I think it's worth sharing a little bit. So let's play that here.
A lot of the LGBTQ community doesn't know the baby's history. He's a wild guy. He once shot a and killed him in Walmart. Oh, this is true. Google it. The baby shot and killed a in Walmart in North Carolina. Nothing bad happened to his career. Do you see where I'm going with this? In our country, you can shoot and kill a nigga, but you better not hurt a gay person's feelings.
So that's kind of the tone of the special, really, is that Dave Chappelle is at different points saying that, listen, on the one hand, Dave Chappelle, speaking as a Black person, understands like struggle and systemic brutality in the United States and oppression in a way that, you know, could be argued that a lot of gay folks living today are very, very far removed from. That being said, it sort of can be framed and can be used in this like right-wing paradigm of justifying very real and very actual threats that are happening towards LGBTQ people and Black people and Black LGBTQ people and all kinds of folks at the same time. And so it kind of goes back to this thing of even though people argue about their ability to say whatever they want to and, you know, talk about whatever they think, and comedians being able to have free speech and have those protections. I think a lot of those fears are overblown, because Chappelle has his own message and has his own like medium to say whatever he wants to. And he has that platform and he makes a lot of money doing it, and people will applaud him and watch the specials regardless. I think that if you watch the special as opposed to the media reaction, you can make up your own mind and not necessarily agree with Dave Chappelle, but also see that a lot of the media reaction is several far steps removed from like Dave Chappelle's actual feelings. I don't think he hates LGBTQ people or like trans people. I just think he speaks very, very inelegantly about it and feels like he has like a right to do so, even in comedy, which in some times are riding the line, and that's Dave Chappelle's comedy, but in other times are just like really cringe and really disgusting. So that's one point to be made there. I don't know if you had, Sean, if you had thoughts. I saw the documentary. You might have more thoughts on the baby angle of it.
Not really. Like, I understand like where he's coming from, because like we go over this all the time as well with artists getting canceled or artists having this and that. I mean, our prime example is Morgan Wallen. Like, look at him. He dropped a hard R, had this whole apology tour bullshit, and he's one of the highest streamed artists of this year and stuff. And we've talked about all these other things that artists have done, but they won't get like their careers won't be ruined for it or this or that. But it's one angle to do that, like do it from our angle, right, of saying like what terrible people are doing. But then the way Dave Chappelle framed it was just not a very smart way of doing it. Granted, it is his comedy, but probably not the best way to say it. Like, you could phrase it in a different way.
And there is a point to be said that like we on Audioface, for example, the Audioface angle of this is that like we were talking about DaBaby's history of not just like murder, but just like domestic violence and things like that, just with fans and things like that. Before the AIDS stuff, like I was honestly surprised the AIDS stuff took him down, but very clearly violence and degeneracy in rap music, the XXXTentacion rule, let's say, don't do anything for your career. If anything, only make them better.
Seriously.
But yeah, it's I think where's Dave Chappelle is trying to say that, oh, gay people have some particular power in the United States that black people don't, in media or like the ability to do things. I just think that's a question of the audience here, because it's not like what Dave Chappelle is kind of trying to, at one point, again, not to spoil the whole special here, is that certain gay people act like they're part of an oppressed community until black people come around, and then all of a sudden they're white again. They're not gay. They don't have their like identities. They like assume that whiteness. And so he's talking about like DaBaby getting canceled for gay related things as an aspect of like white power, like white media figures and people in office would be upset, and people in power would be upset with, as opposed to killing black people or like violence against black women or whatever. Right. Which would the part where I come in is, that's not upsetting enough black people. Like, that's not upsetting enough like people of color and music fans in general. And that's something we talk about on the show all the time, about these double standards in the music industry.
Look at R. Kelly.
To fight about. Yeah. That's a great example.
Look at people who are defending R. Kelly when he is guilty. Like, the verdict of the court is he is guilty for many different crimes. The evidence is there. All this other shit is there, obviously. But these people will still defend him and stuff. So, I mean, that, yeah. I mean, we've talked about ad nauseum here. So it's just, yeah, not the best way to phrase it. There are better ways to say it.
Yeah. And again, that being said, I don't like it all the way Dave Chappelle said this, but I think there are a lot of people who will just like jump on the internet, jump on cancel trains and not hear about the fact that like half of the special is Dave Chappelle talking about a really close friend of his who is transgender. And it's not like that sounds worse. Like, oh, I have a transgender friend, so it's okay. And that's my criticism, is that like you can't also like have this story about it and say like, oh, this makes me not transphobic or whatever. But I think in the context of comedy, in the context of understanding language and when it comes from the heart, like where the intent comes from, it's important too. Because like in a political context, the late Michael Brooks did a lot of vocal impressions and impersonations of political figures. And, you know, he was a white guy and he would do a lot of vocal impressions of people of color. But his vocal impressions would be like Nation of Islam Obama. The idea that...
Right-wing Mandela is my favorite.
Yeah, the idea that these would be caricatures that racists take of these people of color. And Michael Brooks is going, okay, these people are not actually this way. Nelson Mandela is not like a far right wing populist. Like Obama isn't a Nation of Islam radical, but what if he was? And so like
Mandela wasn't in favor for apartheid, but what if he was?
Right. And that comes in the context of Michael Brooks's political history and work shows nothing but empathy and care for people of color and workers' movements and things like that. And, obviously I'll plug like Michael Brooks's work and the Michael Brooks Legacy Project to check out those things, hashtag no politics. But it's to say that it's different depending on where the source is coming from. The context of it matters. Mm-hmm. And you can tell in Dave Chappelle's case, it's not that, the jokes are well thought out and come from love, but like he has like there are trans people in his life who he has had to learn from and like get called out and checked on. And you know, we could say Dave Chappelle is still learning, but I think to completely write him off as a transphobe or anything like that would also be inaccurate as well.
It's still,
yeah.
People like to jump to conclusions way too quickly.
Yeah. Moving on.
Anyways, moving on. Last album review, we have Friends That Break Your Heart by James Blake. It is 12 songs, 43 minutes long. James Blake, we reviewed, his album that came out in 2019, I believe, Assume Form, which you really, really liked that album. I'm still like, if like half and half on it, I thought it was decent, but there was some stuff I thought was okay.
I mean, a lot of folks still love his self-titled from 2011 and Overgrown, the really popular cover of him just like standing in the...
Yeah, the Overgrown, center. Yeah.
Yeah. I thought Assume Form was really wonderful because of... For those listening in the podcast, all this stuff makes a lot more clerical sense. But because the podcast gets clipped up into things, I have to make this clarification or like statement. We've previously talked about Don Toliver this week in his album Life of a Don, which featured a couple songs produced by Metro Boomin. And there are a couple songs produced by Metro Boomin, I believe, in this new album as well. Yes. James Blake, Friends That Break Your Heart, which is a very interesting album that I'll get to in a moment. But while we're talking about James Blake's history, Assume Form came out at a time in 2019 where Metro Boomin was starting to branch out of trap music and test his production in different places and different forms. And James Blake was one of the first places that came to him in that, with songs like Mile High, for example, and Tell Them with Travis Scott and Moses Sumney, respectively. And, you know, with differing levels of success and quality, but you're able to see Metro Boomin really kind of start out there and branch himself out to see, okay, how can I bring this sound to alternative, to trap, to indie? And we've seen that ever since. Notably, there's a Gorilla song that has, I think, helped Damon get better with trap music, because Dead Butterflies was a good start, and then Damon has produced other things with the Gorillaz project that have been better. So artists going on to make other artists sound better, that's awesome. We get to Friends That Break Your Heart with James Blake. A few songs are here, they're produced by Travis Scott, but it's, I mean, sorry, not by Travis Scott, LOL, by Metro Boomin. But this is largely a James Blake concept record with a few features here or there, but a lot of James Blake's really intimate lyricism on, friendship and how sometimes it goes a little bit sour.
Yeah, I think the substance of that, like the lyrics, lyricism of the album is fantastic. I don't like the way it plays out as well. I think it is way too slow of an album, just like what we reviewed earlier. But it was... conceptually, I like it a little bit more. Like, I understand the way, like, he tried to frame it. Obviously, you know me, I like my concept records, so I'll always be partial to them. I do like the way it flows a bit. Like, the features... they're a bit sparse, but they're still good. Like coming back with SZA, I think, was a pretty decent track.
Guess I love you and it's real. I went in too soon for the kill, but I really wanna feel.
You have Show Me later on the record with Monica Martin, which I also thought was pretty good. But a lot of it I thought was just moved a little bit too slow for me for a James Blake record. But I like it. It's a little bit different than stuff that I've heard with than him before. I think it's pretty approachable compared to some of his earlier works and stuff, because some of his stuff can be quite experimental and different. And this is like his, I would like to say maybe his safest record that I've heard him make, which has its pros and its cons. But this is one of those. It might grow on me after time, after a couple of listens. But the first listen through, I wasn't thoroughly impressed like I was thinking I was going to be. Other than the lyrics, I thought the lyrics were very, very well done. If each song, you could really grasp of, again, like friendships, relationships, all this other stuff, which, you know, we can get ad nauseum here. But the way he takes a spin on it, I think is quite good in that way. I just don't like the way it was produced from it. Like, example, Famous Last Words, the first track. It's a track that's 4 minutes, 16 seconds long. And, you know, normally tracks get you like really sucked into the record. But the song is feels like a really slow Sam Smith song without the Sam Smith vocals, where it's just, it's really muted undertones. It kind of takes a little while to get to the point of it. And even like towards the end, it just kind of leaves you wanting more than it really gives you. And then that's like throughout the whole album. You're left wanting more, wanting like some type of crescendo, some type of thing to really get you, oh, wow. It's always just right on the tip of that crossover point.
Yeah, I'll say you kind of get this in Coming Back with SZA, which gets it to like the more upbeat nature that you can possibly get it. But the sound, like as a concept album, it ticks a good box in that it brings you down to this level where things are kind of a little bit quieter, a little bit muffled, where some James Blake songs could be like, you know, like kind of like softer dance floor bangers, not necessarily like really fast get you moving, but like deep electronic songs, yeah, that like had a little bit of a groove to them, albeit a little bit slower. This is definitely meant to be kind of like a sort of sitting in your room or sort of like lying down, like introspection sort of music.
Yeah.
And then it's a different thing for James Blake, and I think it's a lot to get used to. But I think there's, as opposed to the Don Toliver album, where there's a lot of production experimentation I don't think that lands here, I think there's a lot of production experimentation, more of it lands than not. I will say, as a full project, I'm not used to, and maybe through a couple more listens, I will feel a little bit better about the pace of it. I wish it had like one or two more faster moments, but it does, in a concept album kind of way, at least stick to this muffled down, deeper, still within the realm of James Blake's sound, but something that feels like, okay, you have to stay within this concept. I am particularly making a box that I am not going to leave, that is going to allow the subject matter to resonate that much more.
Yeah, I can get on board with that. Like the track with SZA, I thought was probably my favorite on the album, just because I like how it kind of transcends towards like the later half of the track. But towards the middle of it, it just, for me, it just gets stuck at one level. Even the Metro Boomin track, which I believe is Foot Forward, I thought was okay. I just did the snap thingy, which, you know, I hate the snap thingy, which is, so this might be one of my few Metro tracks that I don't really like, because I just think it's really corny when you do the snap thing along with the keyboard and whatnot. It just feels like something somebody would make in 2011. But overall, I think like there is some good parts of this. I like that he made it a concept record, like that he pushed his boundaries a little bit and tried something different within like his own discography, because there's a lots of different sounds that he's had. I mean, he's been making music for a long time, and he's had a lot of good records. I mean, he did a lot of stuff on the Black Panther soundtrack and stuff, and some of those were fantastic. But yeah, this is one of those where I'm not gonna rip it to shreds, because I think it's gonna take me a while to really appreciate it.
Yeah, one of the high points to me is Frozen with Jid and Sueve, because with I always call him Jid, but JID, however we go with this. You read things on the internet, you never know. I he does like a thing with his voice and his rap that's a little bit of like an edited effect to it. It sounds a lot more like gravelly, intense as we're playing through the mix.
Yeah, hypothermia, my hyperbole, feel like Serbia, Asha Hercules, I'm a murderer, dirty, dirty, I can make it dirtier, urgent surgery, oh Hershey Hearst, 50 cal in the version worse, 50 pound, that's a turtle verse, when I get around, if I find the time, I ain't never around,
a typical day, now. A temperature drop, a flick on the tube, a bitch ass cop gripping it too, but when watching home
it makes that part of the song resonate a little bit more because it matches with a production change as well. And that I felt, again, contrasting to the Don Toliver album we reviewed earlier this week. And again, if it doesn't make sense to you, just watch the other video on YouTube. Then it has a little bit more of a cohesion in its experimentation. That's why I say where it's like more often than not, this record feels like it knows what it's doing. A little bit more when it experiments because it lands on its feet a little bit more. Not always still, because I think after Frozen, you get into an aspect of the record where, and even before Frozen, you have like Funeral, where it talks about this idea of being able to be alive for your own funeral and like know what your friends would really say about you and think about you.
Crunch under your feet. I wanna be heard if I can be seen. And I know this feeling too well.
Performance of sadness, but also like deep down, like actual things they like didn't say to you, whatever, that could have been about like anger, frustration, right? All that lyricism sticks out through there, but I think the concept, like the production, doesn't help carry it enough to help the idea like really sing through. Like a concept album, you're really just lining up everything to make it like a really stellar record, and so when one thing majorly falls short in that, unfortunately has to be called out. And this, I think, yeah, the, like I agree with Sean, the production could do a little bit more work there. I think it's a little bit too understated, even if it's for a point, it still could use a little bit more flair.
Yeah, I think that's a fair criticism as well. My arbitrary scale this week is Pitchfork rescored reviews, because the ultimate arbitrary scale is an arbitrary scale because we're doing Inception of the Mind, because that's what we do here on Audio Face, because shit doesn't matter. This is Interpol. Turn on the bright lights. They somehow downgraded it from a 9.5 to a 7.0. One of the most important alternative rock albums ever made. They downgrade it. Because why not? Because fucking Pitchfork.
Yeah, I'm going to give this the big boy Sir Lucius Leftfoot, the son of Chico Dusty, because, yeah, definitely this album did not need to get a 9.2 as it came out. And I'm glad this is Pitchfork going, whoa, maybe we take a little bit too much of the hype bar every once in a while. We should work on that. That being said, like, it 7.7 also seems a little bit rough. Like, again, now you're forcing me onto your like turf of arguing the legitimacy of these scales, which I inherently don't agree with, because this is a really major big boy album.
Mm-hmm.
And I think set a lot of sound and like led a lot of motivation for a lot of rappers to come up after it, not necessarily following that voice and tone continually, but helping them get up out of their mixtape era a little bit. So I'm not sure if it's 7.7 is even fair either, but it gives you a lot to talk about, which is maybe what the bastards want.
Ah, oh, Jesus. All right, we got quick hits before we give you our small music recommendations. First one is Pharrell Williams. He's pulling out of the Something in the Water from Virginia Beach after the police killed his cousin around the same area. The festival, which I believe was supposed to go on, or they opened up, the first iteration of it came in 2019, but obviously 21, and then 2021 it was canceled. But it was supposed to be out in 2022. But now he was saying, I don't want to go to it. Like, I'm canceling from going to it because it's just the energy and everything that, from what happened previously from a mass shooting. I can't do it, which So, like, I guess I understand to a point.
If, at top level, it sounds like Pharrell Williams, who we've been spending the last week just sort of haranguing on Audio Face for things I won't get into here, has been like, at first it might seem like, oh, this is Pharrell Williams doing your woo-woo, bad vibes, bad energies thing. But no, there's something going down in Virginia Beach that's kind of rough. I mean, not only Pharrell Williams talking about the murder of his cousin, that apparently seems to be related to like police violence and stuff that's going on there in Virginia Beach. There's this one story overall in Virginia Beach, like in a lot of places in America, unfortunately, the resulting election of Donald Trump and the supporting of right-wing figures that he gave energy and oxygen to has empowered the extreme right-wing, the nationalist right-wing that is more outwardly racist in a lot of these areas of the country to be more outwardly racist and start to take that out on other people of color. For fear that, you know, they're being replaced because their favorite newsman, Tucker Carlson, tells them that's all the time, hashtag no politics. But there's a thing that happened this week where it was reported that there is a neighbor who lives in like a cul-de-sac in Virginia Beach with her family. I think she's, her name's Janique Martinez. So she's like a person of color. And their neighbors rigged a system to their house that's motion detected to where anytime someone walks by, it starts doing like flashing lights, like same thing fire alarms do, just flashing lights in their house, like towards their house, and speakers that play like monkey noises and yell racist slurs like towards the house. Shit. Like to the speaker, and it's just happening every day all the time. She called the police. The police said hashtag suck it, and so like nothing was getting done about it until neighbors rallied and started telling the national press about this. And so, okay, in defense of Pharrell Williams, something's in the water in Virginia Beach and it's racist.
That's fucking wild, man. That's wow.
That's Jesus. Elaborate racism.
If there's ever a reason to go, if there's ever a reason to fight, that's a reason to fight right there. That's just show them some hands, yo. Just go up to them, show them some hands.
Yeah.
We don't condone violence on Audio Face.
Yes. That being said, no. Oh man, I did not mean a segue like that. We always like to end Audio Face in a fun note, and it's important this week, especially in the light of Facebook going down. I mean, it's been a rough week for Facebook and social media in general. There was the Facebook whistleblower who went in front of Congress to talk about all the things that Facebook knew about being detrimental to people's mental health and growing the product. Yeah, for money, a la cigarettes, but like even more accessible to kids. And so Facebook was also hit by like several major outages, not one, not two, but like I think maybe two, possibly more by the time this goes up, honestly, because you know the internet's real great. And one, you know, Facebook has taken a lot of heat for being unable to address violence on its platforms, hate on its platforms. So in light of that, Facebook started taking a serious step to address mental health on its platform by banning an account named Suicidal Tendencies on Instagram, which is good because you have people who could see social media and that could have a negative impact on their mental health. One problem, that's a band.
Well, one problem, that's a musical artist. Yet you do all these things to keep people addicted as fuck to their phones. And to the detriment of their mental health, and you say that, oh yeah, that's fine because it makes us money.
Yeah, they were previously off of Instagram, but then they were able to return back because they have to do this annoying back and forth with
appeal these process.
Yeah, because they have algorithms that are making these decisions. They're like, oh, we saw suicide. We have no context to, you know, society at all because we are robots programmed by other robots. And so as a result, we are making a lot of these bad calls and ruining things here. And so, yeah, they're finally able to get their account back. But that's why you have to be careful about talking about rather innocuous things that are legal, because the moment you mention certain substances that grow in the ground that are legal in half the states of the United States, you get deprioritized on YouTube. The moment you mentioned certain illnesses that have spread in the past couple of years that have led to shutdowns across the country, even if you talk about it in the wrong way, you're immediately shut down off of YouTube. And so, even if you talk about it in the right way, sometimes you'll be shut down off of YouTube, and this happened to us almost because of algorithms that are making decisions devoid of actual human context. So, way to go, guys. You rock.
Whoa.
How did this accidentally become like a regular size audio piece again?
I don't know.
Anyways.
I don't know. Moving on, we got music recommendations. This shouldn't be too long. So we got two picks each that we'll talk about just to give you guys some stuff we haven't talked about much on the podcast, if at all. So I go first because why not? My first recommendation is I Am Sue. I-A-M-S-U exclamation point. He's a rapper from the Bay Area, I believe from Richmond, up north, Dan's previous neck of the woods. I've listened to him, like a couple of things from him from work and other things that I've actually enjoyed. Like he has like a shit ton of records and stuff that he's released, but there is one called Boss Up 5 in 2019, which has a couple songs, like Bay Area Funk. I smash out my tires looking like a forest fire, ayy, and I'm good, but God great, ayy, I gotta pray every day, ayy, HB to the K, ayy, neck and wrist, 100K, ayy, they really real, cause real is rare, ayy, I'm a real California bear, ayy, and we beast, we all, we fired up, we beast, we all, we fired up, broccoli smoking, got a bop and he soak, if he dolo in the club, he getting checked like he hosting, I can't show no emotion. San Pablo Avenue, which I listen to a lot, like they go really hard, I really like the flow and stuff and the beat with them, and then he released an EP, I believe last week, called California, which is four songs long, and it's actually pretty decent too. Really like his flow. He's pretty like, he's not well known, like known around like just in California, I guess, but not super, super well known around. But I think some of his stuff and his production and whatnot is actually pretty good for trap. Some of it can be kind of your normal average trap here or there, but there is some tracks I've come across from his that I really enjoy. So one of the rare times I will recommend a trap artist here on Audio Face, but I've enjoyed IMC's music the most.
Give us one of those tracks, if I just missed it already.
Yeah, I said Bay Area Funk from Boss Up 5. You have San Pablo Avenue from Boss Up 5.
Oh, I totally thought that like you're just naming places and locations. I thought these were sounds. Like, never mind.
No, those are tracks.
That rocks.
I'm a real California bear.
All right.
Hard track. I listen to a lot. And then the EP, California EP, which came out a few days ago, actually, is pretty good too. Only a couple songs long, but like
worth checking out.
Yes.
My pick is by a little indie group called Men I Trust, because there are very few of those. And it is, maybe you've heard of them.
Yeah.
They released an album a couple months ago, maybe 1 or 2 months ago, called Untourable Album. And it's a lot of bedroom pop indie kind of stuff. I really like it. You kind of get into even like the second song, Oh Dove, and you're like, oh yeah, that's the good shit. It's like a little bit slow.
That's the one with the sugar on it, I believe, right? It's that record?
That'd be the
first
song.
Yeah. Good. Like that track.
My favorite to get into it actually comes near the very end of Untourable Album. It's a lifelong song. Reminds me of Home Shake, which is probably like one of my favorite indie projects that came out. It's like a really nice punchy soul, like love kind of like sensual kind of song, but with really like the tone on the bass is just like really up and nice. It's just really love it. Definitely check that out.
Yeah. I like it. And then my last one is actually just well, it's two artists, but they collaborated to make a really good single. It's Sharon Van Eaton and Angel Olsen. They both released EPs this year, but they collaborated on one song in May called Like I Used To. And it is one of my favorite tracks of the year. Very, very good. It's like one of the things where, you know, I would say like women indie artists are killing it this year. This is like the track I really like them. Like their vocals together are fantastic. It's something that's just like the epitome right now of women indie. You're just absolutely destroying it. But Angel Olsen herself, she released an EP earlier this year as well. You have some good tracks from there. Gloria, If You Leave. And then I believe Sharon Van Etten also released an EP this year, or maybe just a single, Female Fatal. I think that's just a single, Female Fatal. Okay. But the track of them together, like I used to, is just something I've listened to a ton, and I really, really like it.
I'll have to check that out. I've really grown onto Angel Olsen as an artist, and Sharon Van Etten I've also heard great things from as well.
Yes. Because we did Angel Olsen's Whole New Mess, but Sharon Eaton, I don't think we've talked about at all.
Yeah. And then my last one, I think we've talked about them before on the podcast, maybe even reviewed something of them, but I also want to give them a shout out. Bad, Bad, Not Good. They are a jazz group out of Canada. I want to say the eastern part of Canada. And they honestly just came up in the 2010s because they would do a lot of jazz covers of just like the absolute underground hip-hop classics. Like I'm talking Electric Relaxation, I'm talking some Doom songs, and to the point where they started doing some collaborations with Doom, with the Avalanches, and really making a great name for themselves. But true and true to themselves, they are a like jazz group. They do alternative indie, but it, like, ultimately comes down to jazz riffing and all those kind of things. And the recent album Talk Memory was also, I think, was released this week or the week before. 8 songs, 42 minutes long. Some of these tracks are long, as you can probably tell, like 9 minutes, 6 minutes long. Some of them are like nice little short things. I think a nice way to get into it is with Love Preceding Love. Something you can put together in the background as like you're working or doing something. What I love about jazz is that because of obviously there's percussion there, and the percussion is a guide, but the song goes through tempo changes and tone changes and, you know, just mood changes. And it really plays through like the best as a record top to bottom. So I highly recommend just playing it through like that. Get some 42, 45 minutes of your time and just listen to the musical bliss that is Bad, Bad, Not Good, continually consistently delivering these like jazz standards for a decade now. I hope they keep at it.
Right, quick and easy music recommendations. It's fun to do those every once in a while. Get some stuff that maybe an artist we haven't talked about for a few years, or ones that we haven't talked about at all on the podcast. It's nice to have that.
I will say is like one other not like caveat, but like note that a lot of our music listening habits have been warped by Audioface and like by listening to 300 albums every single week. Some things for great because we listen to albums we'd otherwise not listen to, and a lot of those are great. But sometimes we like miss out on things because they doesn't fit into our, did it come out recently? Don't have time to listen to it.
Example, like Chip Chrome and the Monotones from The Neighborhood last year. We never really got to talk about it, but it's a record I've listened to a lot in this year because I finally got around to it this year. But last year, it was just so much that came out. I never got to listen. I never really got to dive into it as much as I really liked The Neighborhood.
Yeah.
So it happens with us. So we sacrifice our own music listening habits for this fucking podcast. So don't say we don't work hard.
Yes. All that being said, though, there's also, on the flip side, there's a lot of stuff we listen to that just doesn't fit the audio face. Like, it's super new 100%. Kind of thing. And so music recommendations allows us to do this. Chord packing allows us to do this. We're looking into other ways where we can listen to more music and review mm-hmm. those things. More on that a little bit later. But yeah, that's just kind of like the inside baseball of that. We love being able to listen to new music as it comes. Be sure to send it to us on anywhere you can reach out to us. That's a comment section on youtube.com/audioface. That's on Twitter at audiofacepod, on Instagram at audiofacepod. You can reach out to us at I forgot the email address. That's annoying. info at syndicate23. Audioface. I totally forgot the email. Just do the social media.
It's an audiofacepod at syndicate23.co.
I don't think so.
I tried.
Yeah, it's definitely in the link.
You can message Dan at Dan from the web on Twitter, Dan from the internet on Instagram.
I'm so extremely unlikely to respond to that. Just message the Audioface account.
Instagram account especially, because we both snap. Like, I see it pretty quickly.
Yeah, so follow us on all of the things. And we will talk to you next week when we've got more music to review as we continue Cold Boy, Tons of Music Fall. Don't know where I was going with that. Cheers.
Also, the Battlefield demo is a fucking disaster, man. It is horror. They destroyed Battlefield. Not in a good way. Like, they got rid of classes. Like, the classes don't fucking matter anymore. Like, you have classes, but I can be a fucking sniper with a rocket launcher. Like, that's so stupid.
They stupefied the game.
Yeah. And it's glitchy as shit, too. Like, if I'm driving a tank and Justin's in a machine gun screen is like this. I'm like holding still and you're just like shaking like crazy. Yeah, it's pretty brutal.
Never change.
I will say the guns are actually pretty nice. Like, I really like the DMR and the assault rifles are pretty solid. Like, I like that gameplay of it. The shooting aspect of the FPS is really nice, but the rest of the game is pretty shit. So be interesting to see if they change anything or if that's going to be it, and then be very disappointed.
Yeah, I hope they. I mean, like, you can't rely on DICE to fix the game before it comes out. So
very true, because they tend to release it and then just wait 3 years later and then make the game amazing.
Yeah,
like Battlefield 5. Like Battlefield 5 at release was pretty glitchy, but now, like, it was about like a year and a half after release, Battlefield 5 got really good.
By that time, the servers are just completely hellish because they're filled with like preschoolers. So we move on to the next Battlefield game, and such is the case. But hopefully, I really want them. There's so many good ideas here. I don't want
just amazing ideas. Yeah,
I don't want it to be like Cyberpunk. But like,
I hope not. I mean, if they have to delay it like, depending on what people are saying, because I guess Justin was looking at forums, because we finally got to play it yesterday and today, and we were both like, what is this disaster? And because a lot of, like, you know, hardcore Battlefield players are like this, everybody was saying the same stuff we were, because, you know, we've played, you know, Battlefield since 2007, so yeah. Hey. So we'll see what happens. I mean, I'm really interested to see like the other game modes, because they only give you one map of Conquest, and the map is like absurdly big. It's like a PUBG size map. I'm like, Jesus Christ, I can't capture half of these objectives because it takes me 3 years to run the next one, and then I just get blown up by a helicopter or sniped if I'm trying to run across. So then all I do is just redeploy and then hop into somebody's helicopter and jump out.
Battlefield is full on LA-ifying there. Like, maps, like every successive game that comes out, it's just harder to run on foot throughout the maps. You need a vehicle, or else
you need a vehicle, dude. It's horrible.
And of course, they're like DLC public transportation, just like Los Angeles does.
We got a Muck Fetro in Battlefield now.
Oh yeah, remember, we're bringing back the Metro map from Battlefield 3, but we're raising your taxes.